Hey, this is Matt Lesher. I play Eobard Thawne on CW's The Flash, and this is the Central City Underground.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back to Central City Underground. I'm Tony Caselli.
And I am Mighty Joe Young.
That's a gorilla reference.
Get it? Giant monkey reference.
Got it. Hey, everybody. Welcome back to Central City Underground, the show where we like to talk about our favorite superhero television series, The Flash. This is Central City Underground 82, Season 3, Episode 13, Attack on Gorilla City. Dun, dun, dun,
dun. We've been waiting so long.
Yeah. Yeah, it's been... somebody on Facebook, I think, or on our Twitter account while we were live tweeting this episode said, remember when we thought Grodd hanging on a gorilla cage in the pilot episode was just an Easter egg that would never amount to anything? How great.
We were wrong in the best possible way.
Yeah, right? All right, Joe, let's talk about some nuts and bolts about this part one of a two-part Gorilla City extravaganza.
Let's do it.
So this story was by Andrew Kreisberg, and the teleplay was by Andrew Helbing and David Cobb. So three guys who've done a lot of stuff with The Flash over two and a half seasons, yeah? And we'll talk more about what we thought about the story and the teleplay in a little bit, I expect. This episode, Joe, was directed by Dermot Daniel Downs.
He's all over the place.
Yeah, you know, it's funny, for whatever reason, on this episode, he is credited as Dermot Daniel Downs. On the other seven episodes of The Flash, he's credited as Dermot Downs. So
maybe this is Earth 2 Dermot?
Maybe. They gave him a middle name. I don't know. He was just, you know, they got fancy. But he's directed a bunch of... great Flash episodes, including a lot of episodes, including our favorite Simeon, Grodd Lives, Guerrilla Warfare. He also did Invasion, as well as lots of other genre stuff like iZombie and Gotham and Supergirl and Legends of Tomorrow and a bunch of other shows.
He knows what he's doing.
Yeah, yeah. And I thought in general that the direction was pretty good in this episode. You know,
yes. I mean, it was a visually very stunning episode.
Well, and we've talked before. Part of the reason I think it took them this long to get to this is because going to Gorilla City is biting off a lot.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
On a CW budget. I mean, that's the thing for me. I have some things that I loved about this episode and some things that I really didn't love about this episode.
Yeah, me too, to be totally honest.
In general, all of that is going to be prefaced with the idea that going to Gorilla City was pretty freaking awesome.
Right.
You know, I mean, for me, I was just going, yes, some of this is not what I had hoped it would be, but I didn't agree with this decision, blah, blah, blah. Right. But overall, there's still that kid in me who was like, oh, my God, we're actually watching a live action version of Gorilla City. And this is awesome.
Right.
You know,
I wasn't sure what to expect either, because this Gorilla City and this Solovar are not what Gorilla City and Solovar are like in the comic books. But that did not make it any less cool.
Right, right, absolutely. So with the handful of quibbles that I had and things, this was a very fun part one of a two-parter, and I can't wait to see what happens next week.
I mean, Gorilla Army, Tony. Gorilla Army.
Right?
It's a Gorilla Army.
How can you not want to see that?
I mean, there is no bad version of this.
I gave this, Joe, 8 out of 10 gorilla backhands.
I personally gave this episode, I also gave it 8. I gave it 8 out of 10 rapidly increasing gorilla IQs.
Right? So fat. But it was 2 years.
It was. And you know what? And I'm glad for it. I'm glad to see, you know, I talked with some of the CCU folks about it too. The smarter Grodd gets, the happier I am.
Yes.
And he's still not quite where I want him, but he's getting there.
Yeah, absolutely.
He's clearly taken some home courses. you know, he's spent some time at the library. I'm very proud of him.
It's funny. I bet Gorilla City does have a library. I bet the books are really big.
Right.
You know, but I also, I noticed we didn't see a lot of Gorilla City buildings in this episode.
I know. It's almost as though they were spending a lot of money on something else.
It's crazy. I mean, we saw the woods outside of Gorilla City. Those were nice. They looked a lot less like jungle and a lot more like, I don't know, mid-Canada forestry. But that's me. I'm not a geographer.
I did like the reference to, oh, I guess global warming's not a thing here.
Right. Exactly. And covered that whole thing in one line.
Right.
And then, let's see, in Gorilla City, we got a dungeon.
Right. Right. And an arena.
And an arena, which I'm pretty sure they did not actually build. I'm just guessing.
They sure didn't.
But,
they sure didn't.
So,
no, I loved the idea that, like, Gorilla City is like, so it's not in Africa so much as Manitoba? Not normally where gorillas are found, but maybe they are all Sasquatches.
But still, and we just have to say right off the bat, some of the effects and the CGI work was amazing.
Holy moly.
And some of it you went, okay, they did what they could on their budget.
Right.
You know, it wasn't going to ever be a $215 million movie, right?
Right, right.
So knowing that, that moment when we went to the Colosseum and we got the long swooping shot that panned up over the giant gorilla statue and into the Colosseum and around the apes, I was like, this is the best thing that's ever been on television.
Right? They are really gunning for that second special effects Emmy. They want it.
Oh, that was pretty fun. So anyway, should we just start at the beginning? There's really two storylines.
This is a very straightforward episode, right? Very early on, the team divides into two and we get two stories.
Right. I mean, the very first thing that happens is we open with Harry Wells running through, you know, a really sepia forest. So we know we're not on our Earth.
And I'm so glad you said it, too, because as he was running through, even I had a moment where I was like, is that a fir tree? Where is he exactly?
That's great. Yeah, and I liked that whole thing. That moment where he tries to jump over the log, and out of nowhere, the ape comes in and just knocks him down. That was cool.
Well, and it's fun too, right? We learn very early on that we've already established in the show that Grodd is quite a bit larger than your average gorilla.
Yeah.
You know, the gorillas are generally top out at about 5 to 6 feet tall. Grodd is significantly larger than that. And what we learn very quickly in this episode is all of the super gorillas are quite a bit larger than normal gorillas.
Yeah. Yeah. Really fun. So then we go back to Star Labs and Jesse is explaining to everyone what's happening, right? Answering questions. I really fell for that moment where she saw HR and just for a minute was like, oh, you're here.
Come on. That line, I'm sorry to take your smile off your face. Come on. Right? That's lovely.
That was adorable.
And this is how you're supposed to start the day, with hugs.
Right. At that moment between them, and I fully admit that HR has just continues to grow on me.
Every damn episode, I like him more and more. You clever, clever people.
Tom Cavanaugh, and I loved watching the two of them in the final scenes.
Come on, I know I'm jumping ahead for just a second, but I have to because it was my favorite line of the episode. Oh, he's gonna be so pissed.
It was funny. One of my other favorite lines was just before that, when Harry comes back, they come through the breach and he sees HR. He's like, what? Why is he still here? What?
I forgot how handsome you are.
Funny.
So good.
So anyway, Beery is explaining to everyone, okay, we have the headline is Guerrillas Attack Central City. So we need to step in. We need to solve this. This is another way to prevent Iris from getting killed and Caitlin from turning evil and blah, 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 right? We can change the future.
Right. Well, and we discover why Harry has been captured by the guerrillas, right? Guerrilla City sent out not dissimilar from the code that they used to get HR. Right. You know, they sent out a little puzzle and Harry figured it out. They wanted to reach him. And Harry brought an expedition to Guerrilla City, of which all but himself are now dead.
Yep.
And Harry is in the wind.
And Jessie's freaking out. They can't find her. And it was at this point where, Joe, for me, I started to go, why would they combine these two things? It felt odd to me that in the writing that Jessie dealing with her father being missing and having to fill in for Flash and she and Wally protecting Central City, that we also got this weird, I feel uncomfortable because you have powers now and I'm worried about what that means for us thing. It just felt odd.
The reason it felt odd for me, and I agree, it felt odd for me too, is we have like only barely sort of even maybe kind of explored the idea of the relationship between Jessie and Wally. And all of a sudden they're on like, we've been dating for 6 months.
Yeah.
Stuff. And it's just like, this relationship is happening crazy fast. And I get that they're speedsters, but come on.
Yeah, I mean,
they are dating.
Nice callback.
Thank you.
I totally get that. That's part of it for me. It was weird. Like, why can't one of you can move, but he hasn't moved there yet.
Right. Right. And, you know, she's talking about how, you know, he's ignoring her, blah, blah, blah. There's a part of me that's like, is he ignoring her or does he live in a parallel universe?
Right. We have not been privy to, you know, the Harry Potter owls she's been sending full of attention, right?
Right.
So I don't know. Yeah. But it just felt odd storyline wise to blend it in that moment. I don't know. Maybe it was just us. I don't know. But what I did love was them teaming up to go to the bank robbery.
Right.
Right. Should we just finish through the Wally and Jessie thing?
Honestly, it's going to take us 5 seconds.
Yeah. So it's a challenge for her to talk with him. She feels awkward. She doesn't want to talk about it. Wally's not sure. He asks some people. They say, you know, oh, she's worried about her father. Don't worry about it. Right.
Right.
Then when the team is gone, they do get called to a bank robbery.
Yep.
And I actually really liked this scene for a couple reasons. I loved him just going, hang on, I got this. And I loved the very practical solve of not having to watch him do a fight scene, not having to do the speed effects, but we just watch the lights reflect on her face.
Yep.
And then he's back.
Right. Also, yeah, again, a nice cost-cutting measure.
Absolutely. But an effective and fun way of doing it, because we got to watch her watch him be
right.
The speedster. Really, for the first time, she got to see him be a hero.
And see how much he loves it. I loved, you know, watching. Wally just loves to play the crowd, man.
Yeah, it really was fun.
You know? Yeah. Oh, no, please. Oh, my gosh. No. Oh, please. It's adorable. Come on. He loves it. He loves it.
And then we did get at least one brand new Star Labs location. And I'm guessing we were in Star Labs, but they went to the balcony of exposition this episode.
That's right. They couldn't afford the hallway this time. They had to go right to the balcony. It's way cheaper.
Yeah, it was funny. I was like, wait, is that Star Labs has one of those? That's neat.
Right. I would have believed it more if like the balcony was like half blown apart.
Right. They keep moving closer and closer to the part of it that's destroyed. I want a scene up there someday.
Right. Right.
But then we have a nice, simple heart to heart where, you know, she says basically, it feels like if you have powers, we're never going to be together.
Which I don't totally get, because there's a part of me that's like, isn't like super speed one of the ways you can breach the Earth? It almost feels as though it would make it easier for them to date.
Right. Maybe you could just go to work and then breach back to Earth too.
Right.
You know, or who knows? But then I did like, again, skipping to the end of the Wally and Jesse thing, I really did like the HR fatherly advice that he gives her.
Yeah, some fatherly advice from a dude who, to our knowledge, is not a father.
No, but looks just like hers. And
right.
The quote that I wrote down from him was, what do I know? I'm just a handsomer guy than your dad with a song in his heart.
Oh, HR. It's dang you, HR. It's impossible not to like you.
Yeah. Yeah.
You charming, charming son of a gun.
Which, so sort of, you know, tangent. Do you think that means we're being set up for a fall in one way or another with HR by the end of the season?
I cannot help it, Tony. Every fiber of my being says / partially really wants him to be Abracadabra.
Yeah. You want that because Abracadabra is a great villain.
He's a great villain with a super goofy name, but he's super cool.
Yeah.
And he's like one of the most established, like one of the longest running, one of the most important Flash villains. You know, let's not forget the Underworld Unlimited storyline, who was the main, you know, when Neron, the super demon devil character,
right,
created his little Legion of Doom, who was his Flash villain. It was Abracadabra.
That's right.
He's an important villain, and I just think Tom Welles would play the heck out of him. Tom Welles, Tom Cavanaugh.
Tom Welles. Tom Welles is a different guy.
Right.
I don't think we've met him.
Not yet.
It'll be fun to see. I don't know. He's always got the drumsticks. Are those magic wands? What are we doing? I don't know.
He's made references to his magician friend.
Yes, he has. Yeah, I don't know. We'll find out. We will find out. So I think that wraps up our Wally and Jesse thing.
Pretty much. Except, I mean, that apparently they are dating now, I guess. They had a super smooch.
I think they were dating before. I don't think that's the first time we've seen them kiss, right?
Right. Well, look, just, you know, a kiss does not necessarily mean dating, Tony. It's 2017.
Very different backgrounds, Joe, okay? you're absolutely right. I think they've, you know, it seemed like they tried to make that long distance thing work, but we certainly never saw much of that.
Never.
She's, you know, so who knows? But yeah, I think now it's official because she's basically taking HR's advice and saying, I'm going to be with Wally. And does that mean she's going to stay here now? And if so, yes, that A seems like kind of a crowded speedster universe.
It really does.
But B, we know they're all going to be needed to beat Savitar.
That's my guess, right? That is my guess / desperate hope is, you know, any second now, John Wesley Shipp is going to show back up as well. And we're going to get the whole Speedster family together.
Yeah. And then, you know, then all that's left is to see which one of them winds up going off to Legends of Tomorrow season 3.
Right.
Really, right?
What if they all do? What if Legends of Tomorrow Season 3 is nothing but speedsters?
Yeah, and we just leave Joe, Iris, and HR running like the Star Labs. What's going on?
Do you know what I think would be a great like season arc for them as well? If they all have to get faster. Joe says, staring at the showrunners, saying, maybe come up with another season arc. Maybe that one is played out.
But to be fair, we're not dealing with that with Barry. And really not even with Wally, because we know Wally has the speed ability.
But Wally does have to get faster.
He has to get a little faster. You're right. You're right. I think your strategy, we'll put that aside. We'll put a pin in it. And we'll put that on the board right next to everyone keeps dark secret from other team members.
No bad can come of this.
So anyway, back to the actual chronology of the episode. They Barry and the team decide to go to Earth 2.
Well, and I have to say, one of my favorite jokes in this particular moment. So obviously Barry is asking Julian to cover for him at work. and Julian keeps getting very excited about the Planet of the Apes. Did you catch the in-joke there, Tony?
Well, sure, because Tom Felton was in a Planet of the Apes movie.
He sure was. Yes. Every time he made a Planet of the Apes reference, I giggled like a 10-year-old.
But also, it was funny. Are you going to Planet of the Apes? No, it's like
it's
a
not
city.
Planet of the Apes. Is it Planet of the Apes?
You're going to the Planet of the Apes. I love that he showed up dressed as Indiana Jones, and they gave him grief, and he was the only one armed.
Well, and in pure Julian, this is one of the things I love about him, absolutely did not care that people were giving him, you know, a certain amount of guff regarding his outfit. And doesn't care.
Right, and to be fair, he's the only one of them that's been on an actual expedition.
This is true. Like,
I love that look he gave them, like, this is how you dress. Found a stone in the desert. Remember me? I'm that guy.
Right. Like, and FYI, also bringing a gun.
Right. Yeah. No. I liked that. I love that they get to, you know, they do the breach, but then we come to one of the first sort of logic-y things in the episode where I went, "What the what?" Which was, you know, three episodes ago, Barry taught Wally how to do a proper recon of the area.
Yes, he did.
Before bursting in, right? And they're in a jungle headed towards a city of unfriendly, super smart, giant gorillas.
Right, who have already killed six humans at this point.
And not once do we see Barry go, maybe I should scout ahead at super speed where no one can see me and I can see what's going on. Because right? Giant gorillas are not easy to hide. In the forests of Manitoba.
Well, right? There was a part of me even that was like, so why are we leaving two speedsters on Earth 1? Kind of feel like we need as much backup as we can for Earth 2 gorilla attack.
Yeah. 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 Right. And you are from Earth 2. So why don't we bring you, Wally, you and HR, you got this.
Right.
Take care of the city for a little, we'll be gone a day. Right. Yeah, absolutely. But so we don't look for the giant gorillas. And then the guy who can run across the country in the blink of an eye gets taken out by a blow dart.
Yeah, but he didn't see those darts coming, right? He was not looking for anything. He was just standing there and then dunk, 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 darts.
Yeah. All right. Twice?
You know.
I mean... Okay. All right. I let it go. I'll let it go. We did have a great discussion on Facebook about why he can't get drunk, but one blow Ooh. Dart can take him out. And
that's a good point.
I think the resolution was Grodd is pretty smart. He knows about Barry's metabolism. He came up with something that would make it work. So, okay, hand wavy. Got it.
Sure. Fair enough.
I still don't buy that they find the watch and he says it's a trap and just stands there and waits for something to happen. It's a trap. Start phasing through some stuff. Run around. Grab your people and get the hell out of there. You know, we see at the end of the episode that he can carry four of them at once.
Right. Yeah, that was a new thing. I felt like we had a missed opportunity of actually having Sisko instead say, it's a trap! Come on, guys. That was so obvious.
Star Wars. So, despite that, they get caught. We wake up to them in jail.
I have to say, Tony, the overhead shot sweeping over Gorilla City.
Right.
One of my favorite moments of the episode.
Yeah, that was pretty great.
Just looks, and I loved, you know, in the comic books, Gorilla City is a very highly technically advanced super city of the future.
Yeah, it looks like something the future looked like if you drew it in 1960.
That's exactly right. It's all domes and bubbles.
Yeah, little flying cars and things driven by gorillas.
No, and I actually really loved this idea of kind of going with this almost ancient Incan version of Gorilla City. It really gave us a sense of history because at this point we still don't know anything about the super gorillas. We don't know how long they've existed. We don't know where they come from.
Right.
And this kind of gives us a sense of their history.
Yeah, good point. Very true.
Which yeah. I just thought it looked awesome.
And you're right. The going through it. I mean, didn't you just stand in front of your TV and go and like, what? Look, we're where we are. I mean, I kept having those moments. And then I would have moments where I'd go, oh, what? Come on, cut it out. Oh my God, look at this, a big ape, you know.
So funny. So weird. So funny.
Garage,
so we're in the dungeon.
We're in the dungeon, right? They can't get out. It turns out everybody's powers are restricted. So Cisco can't vibe them out, and Barry can't phase out of the bars. And this is a talking point, Joe, because it came up on Facebook and Twitter both. Are we assuming that Grodd put a mental block on Barry and Cisco?
That's what I thought it was.
Right?
Because, you know, he didn't do it to Caitlin because he doesn't know Caitlin has powers.
Right. The other two, he's seen their powers in action. Right?
Yes.
Cisco was the one who created the portal for Grodd to get thrown to Earth 2.
Right.
Last season. And so he knows what they can do. And so he's put mental dampeners on them. So, okay. I buy that.
Yeah. That was my thought. I could be completely wrong. But, hey, you know, hand wavy.
Right.
Yes, even Julian's snark powers were not enough to get them out of that prison.
But in this moment, the gorillas talk through people. That's a thing.
Yeah, it takes you a while to get used to it. Well, and of course, I mean, I think everyone watching the episode went, "Ah, that's how we're going to save some money."
Mm-hmm.
But I have to give Tom Cavanaugh credit. He was a great Grodd.
He really was.
Really nailed it, really intense, really scary, still very, you know, really harkened back to when Clancy Brown played possessed Grodd character.
It felt like
the same person.
Yeah, it really did. And, you know, we talk about Tom Cavanaugh all the time, but we got to see him as three different characters this episode.
Right.
It was pretty cool.
Well, and again, we learn really quickly. It's one of the things I have loved about these Grodd episodes is every time we see Grodd, he's smarter. And now we have Grodd speaking in full sentences, using, you know, proper grammar.
Yep.
And it's like, uh-oh, Grodd's getting smart. And yeah, and instead of just being reactive, which is largely what Grodd has been up till this point, all of a sudden we see Grodd starting to put together plans.
Yes.
And this is, all of this stuff just excites me to no end.
During the plan thing, that as Grodd was laying his plan out, that I went, wait, what? Like, it felt oddly convoluted to me. Is it just me?
It was both convoluted and simple. I think the reason it felt convoluted is because we had no context, right? Like, we have not experienced any of Grodd's time on Earth, you know, in Gorilla City. We know nothing about how Gorilla City works.
Yeah.
So he was kind of dumping a ton of info on us, yet somehow it wasn't any of the info we really needed, right?
Okay, like, is that what it was? Yeah, there was just something in there. I went, okay, so basically his plan is to...
Excuse me, sorry.
You all right?
Yep.
Hold on, Joe. I mean, his plan is to be in charge of the apes, to be in charge of Gorilla City. I keep calling him an ape. To be in charge of Gorilla City and to attack Central City.
Well, that's not the plan that he's telling us, but that is his plan.
Right, that's not the plan he's giving us now. Right now, he basically tells us that Solovar is a bad guy, and
right. Solovar wants to attack the humans,
and Grodd wants to take over so that they don't attack Central City because he's got fond thoughts of Caitlin. Basically,
it was actually a really nice moment, and there was a second where I was like, I know Grodd is lying. But boy, he's actually pitching a pretty good case of, you know, even though he was sent here, that Earth One is his home and he doesn't want to see anything happen to it.
Right.
It's like, oh, Grodd, I know you're lying, but I kind of hope you're not. But I know you are.
Yeah. It still made me wonder why any of the apes are. Is he really, his actual plan is going after Central City purely for revenge?
It sure sounds like it.
Because if he wanted to just attack humans, he's got a whole planet of humans there to attack.
That is true.
Right? But it's not about them. If it's about Central City and revenge, that's got to be it, yeah?
There's a part of me that's hoping that they realize that Earth 1 is a less technologically advanced Earth than Earth 2, and he's like, well, easier pickings.
Sure.
Maybe. Because, I mean, you know, that is one of the classic Grodd things from the comic books is Grodd is a conqueror, right?
Yeah.
Grodd conquers Gorilla City. Grodd tries to conquer lots of things. It's what he does.
Mm-hmm. And I really liked the sort of explanation of kill or be killed.
Right.
You know, and when he was telling it, I think he was using that as a falsehood to build up his lie. But I think it's actually very true for them.
Yeah.
Which is why I think when we find out, you know, like you said, this Solovar is very different from the one in the comics.
Super different.
But what we see is that he's still in this world, in this universe, he's very true to the gorilla kind rules that Grodd just laid out, right?
It's right.
Kill or be killed. I can't, my people have seen you. Sisko says, let us go. Or Barry says, let us go. And he says, I can't. My people have seen you. Now right. You all have to die in the arena. I have to kill you, right?
Well, and it does harken back to, I mean, although the arena thing is new to me, you know, it does harken back to some of the comic book Gorilla City because they are extremely isolationist. Right. You know, their technology in the comic books, again, is way more advanced than humanity. So they have an invisible shield around the city that nobody, so nobody can see the city.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, they're much more, you know, they're not so much kill or be killed as much as you there, me here.
Right, right.
But, you know, let's be honest. I mean, big, giant, scary super gorillas, that's fun too.
Right? It really is. And so Grodd tells everybody what his plan is. Barry's going to have to fight Solovar in the arena and kill him. And Barry says, I'm not going to kill people. And he says, you will or you'll die, blah, 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 right?
Right.
And then Solovar shows up.
Right? And, you know, and I talked about this some on the CCU. When I saw the first picture of Solovar,
yeah.
You know, a giant albino ape, because in the comics he's not. He's a gray ape with white sideburns.
With a big cape.
With a big cape! He's got an awesome cape! no pants, but a great cape.
No pants, yeah. I'm gonna do that for Halloween this year.
No pants, awesome cape. But yeah, the first time I saw big albino gorilla, my first thought was Ultra Humanite, but it's not. Ultra Humanite is another gorilla-esque villain in the DCU.
Okay.
You want to talk about convoluted histories? They do not get any more convoluted than the Ultra Humanites. Good Lord. At one time he was a scientist. At one time he was a movie star. At one time he was a giant flying ant.
Let's stick with Solovar that we know.
Yes. So Solovar shows up, and again, yeah, very different. And voiced by the awesome, oh my God, why did I just completely space on his name? David Keith. Sorry. Brian Keith is a different actor entirely. Yes, David Keith. I know him, you know, from one of my all time favorite horror movies, The Thing.
Yes.
But he was also the voice of, the main gargoyle Goliath on Gargoyles.
Yep.
He's done a lot of stuff and he's just got a great voice. You can't not love it.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And I liked that exchange between Solovar and Grodd where, you know, he does backhand him and put him in his place for
he does.
Not telling him that there were humans in the city soon enough.
Well, and it really quickly establishes that there is no love lost between these two guys.
Right. And it was also fun watching one of Barry's biggest foes just get put down.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. Grodd went down like a chimp.
Yeah. Oh, Joe. So then Solovar says, yeah, no, I'll meet you out in the arena. Barry convinces him to just fight him. And if he, you know, and try to let his friends go, they make a deal where Solovar says, yeah, but if I beat you, then you're all going to die horrible deaths.
Yep.
Which
and he makes clear that they understand that it's not going to be pleasant deaths.
Right. He really does. Like right. He's not messing around.
Right. This is not the Solovar from the comics. The Solovar from the comics wanted to join the UN. He wore a suit. He's a diplomat.
Very true.
He's one of the things he's known for is how kind and gentle he is. I was like, ooh, this is a decidedly different take on Solovar.
But, you know, this is part one of
yeah.
two parts. And yeah. So he didn't get killed. Do you think we'll see him again?
I hope so. I don't think you bring in someone like David Keith and not use him more than once.
It'll be interesting to see if the character winds up going in that direction.
I think that would be sweet.
If the only reason he was being that way is because Grodd made a public spectacle, made sure that people knew that
right.
his Solovar's power was being challenged by these humans, and so he had to show up. Right.
Well, and we go to the arena and God bless it. It's that great fight. That first moment you look at the two of them and it's like, wow, he's like two berries standing on top of each other.
Yeah, right.
He's enormous. And again, yeah, spear and shield. No pants, but spear and shield.
I liked the fight. It had a little some moments of weirdness. I mean, the graphics, I loved the fun cinematography, like Barry gets just clocked and we see the blood flying, and some of that stuff was super cool. And again, seeing the crowd and all that stuff, you know, for the CW budget, that was pretty great.
They went all out.
Yes. The problem I had with the fight, Joe, and I feel like I'm negative about this episode, even though I really had fun with it.
No, there were this one, even plot device dropped the ball a bit on this episode.
Yeah, it was like, how many times you got to run before you can throw some lightning?
Right.
Well, how long were we just letting him set up? You know,
how exactly did the vibrating hand stop him but not kill him?
Well, that was the other thing. The reverse flash move is to reach your hand in somebody's chest and stop their heart, right?
Right.
And but instead he did a wavy hand super punch?
I don't know.
And so I don't understand how Sisko was being helpful. Or we've seen Barry run in tight little circles right around someone and throw lightning. So I get that visually it was cool to have him run sideways along the wall.
Well, and I have to admit, even I had a point where I was like, so wait, they took everyone's weapons, but they left their communication system working?
Right. Yeah, exactly. What?
That sort of feels like a pretty sizable error, but all right.
Yeah, so, he does defeat Solovar.
Yes.
Right? Which is neat. I still don't understand how the punch worked.
Nope, me neither.
rather than, just phasing through him and slicing him in half.
Right, and maybe it has a different effect on great apes. I don't know.
But then, Joe, we wind up. Grodd is watching the fight, and it turns out he's completely in charge of a bunch of people anyway. And as soon as Barry wins, Grodd says, take him out.
Yep.
And blow dart number two takes out Barry. But I did like Barry's speech about why he didn't kill Solovar.
Yeah. Right. I mean, again, it's... I certainly made no secret of the fact last season that I was like, boy, Barry's a little too nonchalant about murdering people so far. And it's nice to be like, right, this is not how superheroes do things. Do not kill people if you don't have to.
Yes. Yeah. And it seems like that's been a nice sort of lesson learned.
Right.
You know? And especially since he's trying to stop his entire planet from being invaded, you know.
Right. I feel like, the ghost of Adam Smasher is floating around behind him going, oh, nice. I'm glad to see you've come to this moral decision now, jerk.
thanks for your beneficence.
Right? Jerk.
So what happens next, Joe?
Well, we go back to the prison cells, and everyone is now realizing that they are basically screwed.
Oh, yes. And Grodd takes over Harry Wells again, and they basically find out that Grodd was lying.
Yeah, his plan the whole time was to lead his followers to Central City and take them. And I love that he calls it First Earth, not Earth One, First Earth.
Yes.
It's these little changes that I love.
Yeah.
And that he's intending to use, he's going to force Sisko to open a breach. So that they can get back and, monkey around.
And I love that Sisko's answer, after Grodd leaves and the team is trying to come up with what to do, and, Sisko Ramon steps up.
Yep.
And says, okay, well, what if the answer is we just kill me?
Right.
right? That's a hero thing to do.
Well, and of course, I think none of us are surprised when Julian's like, oh, yeah, no, that's actually a pretty good idea.
Right. Exactly. He's right. But then in his next breath, doesn't he say, although that won't change the fact that something, something, what does he say?
He has some concerns that it's not going to change the future.
Yes, maybe that's what it is.
I'm not entirely certain.
I just remember going, oh, it's not that he wants Sisko dead. He's just weighing things. He's going, yeah, that might work.
Right.
Completely emotionless. It doesn't have anything to do with Sisko. It's that could work, but what about X, right?
Right.
But it's funny because, again, we hit that moment of, well, okay, if Caitlin's going to use her power, one, there's other ways to kill him.
Right.
Like, Sisko's like, the only way is for you to use my powers. I can't use my powers for that. I mean, there are numerous ways that Sisko could get killed in that cage if they wanted to. It doesn't have to be a superpower.
Right. You know, yeah, I feel like they could pick up a bone and just beat him to death.
Right. There's bars right there. So just right. Smash his head right into it over and over. There, he's dead. We don't need Caitlin, right? But they push her and is she going to do it? And then, of course, Barry, being the superhero, steps up and says, all right, here's what we're going to do. Somebody does have to die, but it's not Sisko. So he comes up with the, you know, the, oh, I'm sick trope of prisoner.
The classic.
And again,
apparently the first time the gorillas have ever seen that trick.
My question is, if her powers work, and we're going to use them to freeze Barry, why not just freeze
the bars
and shatter them?
Yes. Literally the first thing I thought. I'm like, pretty sure you could just freeze those bars until they're brittle and break them.
And
also good.
Right? And B, this is where the episode I got frustrated. So, okay, we decide we're going to freeze Barry and trick Grodd. Grodd is telepathic.
He sure is psychic.
He's put psychic blocks on them. That's the only way, right?
I think.
What? It has to be.
Look, some episodes, plot device, oversleep. You know, he doesn't set his alarm. He sleeps through the episode and then watches it and goes, oh, dang it.
I feel like plot device was working overtime on this one with the scepter of befuddlement.
Right?
I just am going, why? Okay, so how does Barry know when to wake up? He's dead. And right, and maybe, okay, he's not dead. They've just frozen him so that when Grodd pokes him, he says, oh, he's cold.
And look, Grodd has seen dead people before. They don't usually turn blue. Grodd has been responsible for dead people before. Let us not forget when he punched a dude into a freaking overpass.
You're right. And none of them turned blue when they died. Why is Barry a really dark shade of blue right now?
I'm afraid he caught Smurfitis.
Oh, he's all smurfed up.
He's all smurfed up.
So he leaves and they whisper, Barry, it's okay. He's gone. And Barry does a super vibrate-y thing. Okay, first off, why does Grodd drag Barry out of the cage 10 feet and leave him there?
Because he has to put him in the bone pile. That's where dead things go, Tony, in the bone pile.
I must have missed that part.
Yeah, he just drops him into a big pile of bones.
That must have been a sign that I missed, bone pile. It's with the sign that Julian talked about. We're not allowed to come in the city? It would have been nice, a sign. No, don't come in the city. That would have been nice. Julian made me laugh with that whole thing.
Yeah, there's a whole lot of stuff that happens from this point on that's just kind of like, what on God's green earth? What on Grodd's green earth is going on?
But why does Grodd not know he's dead? He's still alive. He's telepathic.
Conveniently forgot to read his mind at that point.
I mean, and so if if Grodd's telepathic block is the only thing stopping Barry from using his powers, Grodd turns it off?
Well, here's the thing. So we meet Grodd and we meet Solovar, both of whom are capable of reading and projecting their thoughts, clearly, right? That's how they talk.
Mm-hmm.
There's a part of me that's like, hey, Grodd, Maybe put a couple psychic guards outside so that they're just reading their minds to let them know if anything's up.
Right. Or leave a guard in the prison.
Like, right?
Just standing there. Maybe not even a real good psychic one. Just one who can see.
Right? Just put up a nice big tire swing for him to sit around and, you know, he'll be fine.
So he could say, hey, you guys, the one with no powers is using her powers to freeze that guy. Is that weird, you guys? Hey.
Right? that seems like a red flag.
So, anyway, somehow, Grodd lets them escape.
Yep.
And
well, he doesn't so much let them as, you know, he's chasing after them, but they get away.
Beery speeds them out of the city. They wait for some reason until they're in the forest to create a breach.
Yep.
Why?
They do make some reference to we're far enough outside of the city that he can use his powers. So maybe the city had some? I don't know.
Beery just sped them out of there, though.
I don't know, Tony.
It can't be.
Nothing makes sense.
She used her powers in the city. It had to be a selective thing for the two of them. That's
None
what
of
I
it
like,
makes sense.
I know. I spent so much time trying to figure out why. I was hoping you were going to talk me off the ledge, Joe.
No clue. No, it was the thing that bugged me the most about this episode is the absolutely inconsistent internal logic.
Yes. Okay. All right, so that's fine. They get away. They get away, and then it turns out Grodd has a backup plan.
Yep.
Solovar is. Did we see Solovar in that last scene? Is he chained up somewhere? Is he around?
I didn't see him.
Not there. Yeah. So maybe he's just disgraced, living in a hovel somewhere now.
Maybe.
Or chained up in embarrassment.
Getting fitted for a new cape.
And Grodd has Gypsy.
Yep. Not sure how that happened, but I'm sure we'll find out next week. We better find out next week.
I'm sure they'll explain it. We were theorizing about that during the episode. Do we think that Gypsy maybe vibed where Sisko was and knew he was in danger and came to try and help him and got caught?
I feel like after she got a bunch of coffee from Earth One, she was like, you know what? There's a lot of other cool things on other Earths that I think she was on an interplanetary shopping spree.
Okay. And got caught.
Yep.
Interesting.
Yep.
Yeah, I do think she is.
I don't really think that.
Earth 19's Gypsy. Somebody.
Yes, I don't think she's Earth 2 Gypsy.
Yeah, a couple of people were postulating that maybe she's a different Gypsy, but that wouldn't make sense to me that they would introduce another one.
Yeah, no, I think this is our Gypsy.
Yeah. So
the gang makes it back to Earth 1. You know, one of the things, I mean, going back to Grodd versus Gypsy, how awesome does Grodd look in his battle armor? Come on.
Yeah, absolutely.
So cool. You know, and I know a lot of people are wrestling with this, and I wrestle with it to some degree, too. So Caitlin and Julian have a bit of a tiff, a wee squabble. as, you know, she, and I think we all at least somewhat suspected it, right? That Julian's main motivation for going with them is, you know, he's got some, you know, proper British crushiness on Caitlin.
Yeah, I think it's a good combination of that and, hey, parallel Earth, right? And I think it was those two things, absolutely.
He lives dangerously.
And plus,
he lives for danger. That's what he said. I live for danger.
He lives for danger.
And, you know, they get into their little tiff. And again, agree to go out on another date. And I get it. I know a lot of people are terrified, you know, have some legit concerns about this. I'll tell you, I actually really like the Caitlin and Julian combination. And part of it is after 3 seasons, it is so nice to see Danielle Panabaker have chemistry with someone.
That's actually very true. I agree with you.
I am sorry. Her and Ronnie, nothing.
No.
Her and Teddy Sears, even less.
Absolutely less than that.
Right?
Yeah. I mean,
there's just no sparkage there. But these two are sparking like crazy.
And we get to see it evolve, which is nice. And, you know, the thing for me is, if that relationship continues, does that mean that there's no way he dies? I feel like she can't have all three guys die.
I mean, this is a show that is not known for its repetition. They've certainly never gone back to the speedster villain well. They've certainly never gone back to having the same basic crisis every season.
Joe,
that's
not
what this show does.
Tell when you're being facetious. Okay? All of us. We all know.
I'm just saying. The show repeats itself.
I know, but we can't. There's no way, right? Which is why I wonder if Tom Felton is going to stick around for a second season, and if it's HR who's going to die.
I wonder. I definitely wonder. I'm torn because I've become so fond of both HR and Julian.
Yes.
You know, I don't want either of them to go.
I know. And maybe they'll do something ridiculous kill Jesse Quick or something that completely blows our mind.
Well, and there's a part of me, they talk about how one of them will betray them. And it's like, maybe it is HR. Maybe HR is abracadabra. I don't know.
Right. Don't know. We don't know. And that was really one of my questions coming out of this episode was, what's our next, you know, this little break from the sort of Savitar story, I'm really enjoying. And I'm excited about next week. But, you know, let me look. Where are they? I did look up. So this week was Attack on Gorilla City. Next week is Attack on Central City. March 7th, the week after that, is The Wrath of Savitar.
Right.
Then March 14th, we don't know the title to that one yet.
Nope.
Or I don't. I haven't found it. If somebody else out there knows.
I was just looking. I didn't find it either.
And then March 21st, episode 17, is the musical crossover with Supergirl called Duet. So I don't know. I just know that this little break from the Savitar thing is fun, but all that stuff is still percolating because 2 weeks from now, it's going to come to some kind of a head with the Wrath of Savitar.
Yep. 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 Yep.
So anyway, I agree with you. I did love Julian. All right. I should fear you. You know what I do when I'm afraid? You know what I like?
A nice steak fillet.
A nice steak with a little béarnaise sauce on the side. What do you say? And he's charming.
He is. He can be snarky as all get out, but my goodness, when he turns on that charm.
It's really fun to see Tom Felton do that, too.
Right? Right. You know, especially for, you know, I mean, I'm not the biggest Harry Potter dude in the world. I like them. I'm just not super familiar with them.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, so many of us are used to him from the movies as, you know, snarky, evil little weasel boy. Yep. I forget his character's
name.
Draco
Malfoy.
There it is. And it is nice to be like, oh, look how charming and boyish he is.
Right. And so, you know, there's a part of me that really hopes that it works. It would be nice to see that work for a season. If they're going to go that way. For a while, I was hoping they were just going to be friends and team co-workers like she and Cisco. It seems like there might be more than that. So, okay, let's let it work then.
Right. You just can't deny that chemistry, man. Well, the last shot of the episode is Grodd and the Great Ape Army.
Oh, right, right, right.
It's the Great Ape Army. Bow, get bow, on bow. Board. Wow. 2 points for anybody who got the insanely weird reference I just made.
No, come on. Everybody's going to get that.
Nope. I bet most won't.
I'm guessing we get lots of feedback that people will know that.
We'll see.
I knew what it was.
I know you did, but you and I are of an age.
So, Joe, I think that wraps up. What have we missed talking about? Anything?
I don't think so.
I don't think so either, and I think we should do some feedback.
Let's feedback it up. Back it up. Feedback it up.
I'm going to just play this feedback right here.
Do it.
Right now.
Do it.
Hey, guys, this is Harley Quinn, or I guess as Tony has redubbed me a couple weeks ago, Jesse Quick.
That was my fault.
I don't know about that.
Sorry, Harley.
I did enjoy the melding of my names. That was fun, Tony. All right. Anyway, I just wanted to send in a quick feedback on this episode last night, which was awesome, but I just have one quick comment, and it's the same comment I had on Legends last episode, and it's, why the romance? Why so much romance? I mean, I get that we've got to have some of it, but does everyone have to be in a relationship? And I like Julian. I don't want him to die, and if they really are setting him and Caitlin up, then Joe is right, and he's going to die. And that makes me sad. Anyway, this was my quick feedback. Loved the episode. Talk to you guys later.
Thank you, Harley Quinn. And yes, I apologize for calling you by a completely different name the other week. Yeah, I know. I agree.
We're all feeling it.
But I wonder, Joe, as Harley was talking, it made me think, do you think this also means, or could also mean, Joe West is the one who dies?
I still think that's a strong possibility.
You know, if we're going with the romance, then he and Cecile have one going. Julian and Caitlin have one going. But we've seen Caitlin's life fall apart two seasons in a row.
Yeah.
I just feel like it might be time to do the thing that everyone's going to hate and rip that father figure away from Iris.
Well, and there's a part of me, too. Like, I've noticed in the last few episodes, Joe has had not a ton to do. And I do sometimes worry that they are prepping him for the big goodbye.
I don't know. I don't know. We'll have to see.
I will be very sad.
I mean, Jesse Martin is a Broadway star. He's a TV guy. He could have other projects going on.
This is true.
I don't know. We'll see. Anyway, thank you for the feedback, Harley. Joe, you want to read one?
Yes, I have some feedback here from Dad L, Last Father of Krypton. He goes on to say, hey, Undergrounders, wow, they actually pulled off Gorilla City on this show. Back in my day, we could only see Gorilla City in comics and cartoons. For a CW show, I thought the CG was great and cleverly used, and I bet they are saving some for next week, yeah. Right? Absolutely. Plot Device made at least one appearance, but I'm always willing to overlook him as the overall episode was great. And this is only the first part. I liked how Grodd pulled one over on Team Flash. We really need to see that Grodd is super smart to make him a viable threat. I agree completely. As a matter of fact, one of my favorite reoccurring lines throughout the episode was, Father taught me to think one step ahead.
Oh, yeah.
Right? I am not willing to overlook the Caitlin-Julian relationship, however. Just not feeling that. I need to remind her that bad things happened to her significant others before she had powers. I really like Barry's optimism at the end of the episode. For comic book nerds, you will recall that Barry was given the Blue Ring of Hope during the Green Lantern Blackest Night storyline.
Yep.
Barry's hope is an integral part of his character. I also was excited to see Gypsy's return. I give this episode 9 out of 10 Take Me Down to Gorilla Cities. Yes, that's me making a GNR reference just like Cisco. Right? Thanks, Dad L, Last Father of Krypton.
Take me down to Gorilla City where the grass is green and the dirt is gritty. What? I want to please open a breach for me. Okay. Joe, what do you think of Dad L's...
I absolutely get where everyone's fear for Julian and Caitlin's coming from. Totally get it. I just think they're really cute together.
I do too. And I didn't want to, but you know, if we do, I guess, the good sort of director and storyteller thing for a minute and look at it from Caitlin's point of view, right?
Right.
She was married to a great guy, or she was going to get married. She was excited. Life was good. And
yes, he was a very great mannequin. I'm sorry. Please continue.
Yeah, whatever. The horrible things at Star Labs happened, and he disappeared, right?
Yep. He exploded.
Right. So that was sort of just bad luck.
Yep.
Right? And then she got fooled by a guy who was using the whole team.
Yep.
So that was awful, and someone being deceptive, right?
Mm-hmm.
So it has been twice. But I can understand her for a while pushing Julian away, but also now he's part of the team. He's sweet. They've gone through similar experiences together in having these things happen to them that they didn't want to have happen.
Yep.
You know, the alchemy and Killer Frost thing. So I can see how they could both, how we could, they could want this to work and go for it. The thing that I hope, yeah, doesn't happen is that it becomes, like you said, a complete repetition.
Well, and it's a testament to the writing on this show, right? You know, they introduce H.R. Wells, and I, like a lot of us, was like, I'm not going to like him.
I shun the new guy.
Right. And as the episodes go on, I find myself really finding him fun and charming. And I had a similar thing with Julian initially, you know, when they first introduced Julian. I'm not going to like him. And as the season goes on, I'm like, no, I'm not ready to let him go, which is perfect because we know somebody's going to die.
Right. One will betray, one will die, one will suffer, one will fall.
One will fall, which maybe doesn't mean death.
Right. One will betray, one will fall, one will suffer a fate worse than death, which, you know, we've talked about what that means and who knows.
Right. So, you know, and if there is the threat of death looming over the characters, it works better when you're actually genuinely invested in all the characters.
Yeah. Yep.
Right? When the thought of losing any of them makes you go, no!
Yep. Yeah, but, and they've done a great job, I think, of making all of the people in this series, especially considering the problems people had in season one with Iris and,
right.
and the writing of her as a not particularly well-rounded character, right? At this point, everybody, I think we're going to be sad to see any of these people die.
Yep. Yep, 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 yep.
Yeah. And I agree. I agree. All right. Thank you for the feedback, Dad. I'm Joe. I'm going to read our last. No, I'm not.
We have two feedbacks more.
To play our next to last feedback. This is the Green Butterfly.
Hi, this is your Eye in the Sky Green Butterfly. Oh my God, Grodd was just as awesome as I thought. I had no idea there was another gorilla that was actually worse than Grodd. That was so cool watching Barry use so many of the different tactics he has learned throughout these seasons to try to defeat Solovar. It was awesome having Tom Cavanaugh play two characters in one episode, and it was great having Jesse back on Earth One. Do you suppose that if Jesse really stays with Wally, that they will keep all of the speedsters in Central City? Or do you think they're destined to ship them off, Wally and Jesse, to other cities like they are in the comics and only come together for the really, really big bads? Either way, I'm glad Central City's full of speedsters right now because there's a gorilla army coming. That episode was everything I wanted and more. 10 out of 10 frozen flesh sickles. Have a super week. Green Butterfly, out.
That's great. Thank you, Green Butterfly. 10 out of 10, frozen flesh sickles. That's really funny. Yeah, that's a great question. You know, Joe, we've talked about Keystone City.
Right.
And that's where Wally West makes his home in the comics.
You know, and it's you know, right across the bridge from Central City.
Yeah, so maybe that's one way they solve the three speedsters on Earth One is Wally and Jesse get themselves a little apartment over in Keystone City.
And I will say, we forgot to mention this, Tony. They did make reference to another famous DCU city in this episode.
They did. I called it out on Twitter while we were live tweeting and forgot to put it in my notes.
Bloodhaven.
Home of Nightwing.
Indeed.
Nightwing, of course, for the non-comic book folks out there, in the comic books, Dick Grayson, who was Robin for a long time, eventually left being Robin and became a hero called Nightwing, and he makes his home in the town of Bloodhaven.
And I have to be honest, I was actually glad to hear Julian say the name because I could never tell if it was pronounced Bloodhaven or Bloothaven.
Right.
Because it's got the U with the umlaut over it.
Yes. Well, and you are not an Arrow watcher, Joe, but
I have
referenced Bloodhaven numerous times in Arrow.
Oh.
And which makes sense because Nightwing is a little bit of a darker hero,
yeah.
Sort of like the Arrow in the TV series.
Totally.
Yeah. So, yes, that was another fun Easter egg call out.
Right? Loved it.
Thanks, Green Butterfly. It'll be interesting to see if they do spread out the speedsters a little bit, if they keep them all here.
Right.
I still vote for one or more of them joining Legends team.
I agree.
Yeah, I think that would be cool.
I think Legend Teams needs a speedster and a magician, is all I'm saying.
So, Joe, we got one more feedback, this one from Christy, and it goes like this. There was a lot of hype leading up to this Grodd episode, and I don't think it quite lived up to it. I'm guessing, hoping, next week will be more of a payoff. It seems like we spent very little time actually interacting with the gorillas. We even had Grodd speaking through members of the team, which I guess was an easy way to save money on special effects. I did really enjoy the trick they played on Grodd to make him think Barry was dead. I guess Caitlin's powers work differently than Barry and Sisko, since they weren't able to use their powers in the cells? If Jesse's going to stay on Earth 1, that means Team Flash will have three speedsters, which is too many for plot purposes. No villain would stand a chance against Team Flash ever again. That means one of them will either have to die or go to another Earth. Christy. Yeah, thank you, Christy. Good feedback.
You know, it would make sense if, you know, if they got rid of one of the speedsters. There's a part of me that was like, well, would they go with, you know, would they try to get rid of Jesse because she's the one we're least invested in? But even Jesse, I'm pretty darn invested in. It's like, I don't want any of them to go.
Right? No, I agree.
Right?
Yeah, I don't know. I just don't think they'll kill one of the speedsters. Do you?
Right? Maybe Impulse will show up for like the one episode and die.
Right. Grandpa, it's me. I'm from the... Oh.
What? Right?
Hello?
My name's Max Mercury, and I'm from the...
Who was that guy? He sounded important. I don't...
Right? Max Mercury. What
about over there on the bone pile?
Boy, I really do think Star Labs needs a bone pile now. Flash comes back. He's like, it's a huge thing on Earth 2, man. Everyone's got one.
Yeah, everyone's got one. All you guys down there in the pipeline, come on up here. We got a thing for you.
It would explain what the heck they did with all the dead villains from last season.
Maybe you can see it from the balcony of exposition. Overlooks the bone pile.
The bone pile.
Hey, you want to go upstairs? Look at the bone pile for a little while? Okay. Right?
That seems less romantic than you think it is.
All right, Joe. Like I said, I really liked a lot of this episode. I felt like in the podcast, I harped on the things that I didn't like a lot. But, 8 out of 10. And it had Gorilla City in it.
Right? Right? Glaring plot holes aside, if it was just an episode full of this many glaring plot holes, I would have given it a significantly lower than 8.
You know what? I think I'm right with you. But the sort of the guts to say, we're going to do an episode in Gorilla City, and, you know, the effort it took to make all of that work totally counteract what I thought was some just glaringly weird plot things.
Yes. But at the end of the day, Ape Army.
Right? And it's part one of part two, and I can't wait to see part two.
Right.
Because now, when we left this episode, they don't know the apes are coming, right?
Oh, no. They have no idea.
Yeah, so this was a big win-win for them until, you know, next week when the apes show up. That's so fun.
Oh, my gosh. I cannot wait.
Yeah. Yeah. Very cool. All right. Hey, thanks, Joe. Let's do this again next week.
I mean, if we have to.
Everybody, join us on our Facebook page, Central City Underground. You can also follow us on Twitter at The Flash GSM. We had fun this week. We actually, rather than be on Facebook during the episode, I was doing live tweeting during the episode with a bunch of Flash fans, and that was fun. So feel free to join us there as well. Or you can follow me on Twitter at TonyCaselli.com. And as always, I want to encourage you to go to Central, go to GoldenSpiralMedia.com and listen to all of the great podcasts, because there's a bunch of really fun podcasts on there for you to download and listen to. And again, if you're enjoying the podcast, please do us a favor and leave us an iTunes review.
Yes.
We would love to get another iTunes review or 3 or 8 or 10 from you guys. We have 2 new ones, Joe.
Yes.
I don't know if you saw those.
I did.
And I want to thank the people who left them. One of them, one of the iTunes reviews, Joe, we got is titled Fun, and it's from Professor Dr. McSwizzlefeeder. And the whole review consists of "'Twas neato, my dudes." So I'm taking that as a very positive feedback.
I doff my cap to thee, Professor Dr. McSwizzle.
"'Twas neato, my dudes." That made me laugh. And there is another one, but for some reason, all of the reviews are now showing up out of order.
Did you click most recent?
I don't know what I've done. Oh, here it is. And the other new one we got, Joe, was is from D. Winship, and it's titled "Hands Down the Best Verlantiverse Show." And it says, "This podcast is undoubtedly the pick of the litter among comic book TV show podcasts. The guys have a great time without falling in love with their own humor." Oh, he's talking about you now, Joe.
I can't help how funny I am, Tony. That is something I live with every day.
"They also know how to examine and analyze an episode and have fun with its flaws without focusing on the negative. We listen to this kind of podcast to enhance our appreciation and enjoyment of the underlying show, and this podcast, above all others, does just that," which is very kind of you to say. So thank you, D. Winship, and we would love to get more iTunes reviews on there, folks. They just help keep the podcast visible to folks looking for podcasts, and we appreciate when you leave them, so thanks.
Right? I wish I had a sound clip of Wally going, "Oh, no. Oh, please. Thank you. Thank you so much."
Well, now that you've put it out there, maybe someone will send you one.
Maybe they will.
All right, everybody. Hey, thanks again for joining us one more time. We're going to do this again next week. Next week, the feedback deadline will once again be Wednesday, midnight, Eastern Standard Time. And then we will talk about part 2. Attack on Central City. Dun, dun, dun.
Twice the apes.
Thanks, everybody. We'll talk to you soon.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Are you a podcaster who loves creating great content but gets overwhelmed by the audio editing process? Are you a business professional or an entrepreneur that wants to start a podcast but aren't sure where to begin? You need Pro Podcast Solutions. Pro Podcast Solutions has a robust suite of services to equip podcasters and help podcasters create better content than ever before. Visit ProPodcastSolutions.com today and find out how you can get your first episode produced for free. That's ProPodcastSolutions.com.